Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. I tell my friends that when I podcast interview my friends and colleagues, I'm always intrigued and learning and growing. And I know our listeners are going to learn so much about this wonderful human being. You probably already know him, but I like to preface this because we're going to go into the journey of veterinary medicine and some things that are going to resonate with a lot of the listeners. So joining me is, I think we're going to put the word "the" in front of it, the Dr. Andy Anderson.
Thank you. That's nice. It's good to be with you.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. And I'm going to go through a little bit of your background and just kind of take a little bit of pause because I'm always so curious to see how you evolved and where you are now, because I'm sure, like we were just talking about earlier, like if you said 10 years ago, if you were going to think where you are now, it probably would not have known that. Right. So
no way.
Wouldn't yeah. So Dr. Anderson, he's the executive chairman of CityVet, and he attended Texas A&M University, earning his BS degree there as well as his DVM. So you went there undergrad and in vet school.
Correct, yeah.
So you got a lot of A&M in you.
A lot of A&M in me, and you know what a tremendous era it's been there on that campus, and the growth that they've seen is just fantastic.
Right.
I was recently there for a quick tour. We were working on some entrepreneurship initiatives and just, it'd been a while since I've been back, and my goodness, they've made a lot of progress.
They really have, right? A lot of great research is happening there. So what is it like, by the way, because a lot of the vet students listen to the podcast and some of them say that it's has its pros and cons of going to the school where the vet school was, like for undergrad as well as for vet school. What was that like for you, knowing that like you got into the vet school where you did your undergrad work in?
You know, in that time frame, I mean, those were sort of the James Herriot years, and there were, you know, hundreds and hundreds of applicants for every position. And so you didn't really think you had a choice. You just had to go.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, sort of the expected path. And of course, I had this experience where I got accepted to veterinary school my senior year in undergraduate, and I declined the position. Oh. And I went off on a 11-year journey in the business world, then had to come back and reapply. And my goodness, that was a difficult question when they asked me, what were you thinking and why are you back?
Oh, I didn't know that. See? Okay. So wait, so when did you go? So you attended Harvard University and got your MBA. So when did that happen? Before or after vet school?
So it happened before vet school.
Oh, wow.
So I was working in New York on Wall Street for, you know, big firms, DLJ, Goldman Sachs, doing corporate finance and mergers and so forth. And, you know, really had a crisis of the soul. And I realized that I had made a lot of decisions about that part of my path along that journey for all the wrong reasons. And that I needed to peel the layers of the onion back and get back to the core, who I was, what my purpose was, why God put me on this earth, and get busy on that path. And so I really, after a 10-year, 11-year business career, unwound that materially and then re-entered the pursuit of veterinary medicine at Texas A&M.
And did you always have, because I get asked this question a lot as a veterinarian, did you always have that spark of the veterinarian in you? Like you wanted to go to vet school because your path is a little different than others. So you went back to vet school. So was there that bug? Like I felt like you were just talking about that calling. Did you feel that?
I did. I was sort of a classic kid. My best friend's father was a veterinarian in, you know, like junior high school, and he took an interest in me and I did in the profession, and he was a great mentor, and that got, you know, that got me interested in the profession. The only subject that interested me in that era of my life were life sciences. So I knew that was just fundamental to how I was made. And so one thing led to another. And I took a, you know, a very productive and interesting path for 10 years, but ultimately I found my way back to the core.
And then you served on the board and executive committee of the American College of Veterinary Surgeons and was the organization's treasurer from 2009 to 2015. And in that tenureship, because we're going to talk a little bit about leadership, but do you think that this had, obviously this had some sort of an influence on where you are now with leadership and organizational development, but what was that experience like to where you are now? What has that taught you, that that component in your life?
You know, I'm an entrepreneur, and so organizations to me that have, you know, long tenures and sort of move slowly can be very frustrating. So, you know, part of my interest in getting involved in organized veterinary medicine was to look for a way to give back, particularly to my college, you know, after doing a small animal surgery residency at Missouri and then having a successful business side of veterinary medicine. I assigned a lot of that success to the mentorship that I received in my training and just the help along the way that so many others gave me. And so I looked for a way. I said, what do I know that could be helpful to anybody? And I guess because I had this finance, you know, background, and I understand how money works and how investments work, I thought, well, that would be a way that I could give back. So getting involved gave me new insight into many challenges in veterinary medicine that I was just unaware of because I was living my own little life, you know, in my own little silo. And it really opened my aperture to what the heck was going on out there for other people, whether it be in different geographies or, you know, the people that were encountering different challenges than I was. And, you know, so like everything, I just keep learning. I meet new people, they teach me things, and I'm thankful.
Yeah, well, we're thankful that you're in this profession. And I mean, all the incredible work that you do and continue to do, you know, veterinary medicine, the landscape has changed so drastically over the years, you know, where we talk about mergers and acquisitions and corporate medicine and independent practice. I'm curious to get your take on that because you've been involved with so many different entities in that realm. So what does veterinary medicine look like to you with where you're at now with City Vet?
Well, I had, you know, I didn't mention much in the bio about Blue Pearl, but I had been one of the, you know, builders of the Blue Pearl entity, and I ran the business development aspect of that business. And, you know, after our sale to the Mars family, which they were wonderful folks, and I enjoyed getting to know the family, I had really considered that maybe I was done in veterinary medicine. I thought, you know, I didn't want to be the one-hit wonder, but I also thought, you know, what would be next?
Right.
And so as I began to consider things, I realized that my experience told me we needed to get veterinarians back in control of the four walls of hospitals and clinics so that we didn't lose the culture of veterinary medicine to corporate entities. And so really very much serendipitously in the way I view the world, I think God put City Vet in front of me as a way to give back again. It was founded by a classmate of mine in vet school. It's all about having veterinarians own a big part of their hospitals and really drive the culture in the local hospital. And that drew me right back in. I met a bunch of great people. The City Vet's 23 years old, so it's been doing it for a long time. And I got back involved just to try to accelerate what they had been doing. We brought some additional capital, which allowed us to basically support more veterinarians as leaders in their practices by providing the capital, because most young veterinarians don't have the capital. So that's something we wanted to provide. And it's been a great journey. And I'm excited about where City Vet's going. And I'm really fortunate to have even a small role there.
Yeah, you're downplaying. You've done so much work. I'm telling you, I've heard such great things about what you're doing. And it does boil down to your leadership. And my question for you, because I know you're passionate about talking about leadership, how would you describe your leadership style?
Empowering. I really believe that leaders are facilitators and discoverers of the properties of greatness within the folks they lead. So that's all I try to do. I try to introduce leaders that I coach to concepts and topics that they may not have approached before, and open their eyes and their hearts to what they could become with help of others. And we've all crawled over, you know, on the shoulders of our mentors, and particularly in our profession. It's not so much true. Maybe a tech guy at 17 years of age figures out how to crack some code and they build a new mousetrap. But for veterinarians, we're very much a mentor culture where, you know, somebody taught me how to do abdominal surgery, and I then went and mastered that and taught other people how to do abdominal surgery. And now we're sharing. You know, there's plenty out in the universe for everyone. And so being involved as a leader where you are sharing everything you have, whether it's knowledge, whether it's financial capability, whether it's ownership, this is how we're going to work through the challenges we have today in veterinary medicine. And you know, I've listened to some of your podcast. I particularly enjoyed, you know, what Ivan Zaks had to say about the work he's doing, addressing burnout, addressing, you know, mental health in our profession. All of that is very important. I sort of come at those issues through leadership from the, you know, for instance, Dr. Zach really thinks about organizationally, how do we address those problems? I come at it from leadership in the standpoint of how do we get the person to address those issues? Because I think at the core, we all are responsible for our own mental health and well-being.
Yeah.
So it's not until we take control of it as a person that we really get somewhere. It's great to create the environment and ecosystem that is sensitive and supportive of those topics. But I really believe we got to help people figure it out.
Right. You know?
And that's, so we built the City Vet Academy. It has components of that. I love sharing the principles that have grown on me over time to support my own mental health and well-being. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about stoicism and, you know, purposeful living and things like that. And I just try to help people find on-ramps to those type of support systems, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And speaking of purpose, and you know, you and I have had careers where we've evolved over the years, but when you think of the new graduate or those that have been out for 3 or 5 years, they try to say, like, you know, doc, what's my purpose? You know, what would be some things that you would say to our colleagues to figure out, maybe they're trying to reinvent themselves and do something a little bit different within the profession. So like, what are some tools or coping mechanisms, whatever it is you want to call it, that you can give our listeners about identifying their purpose?
Yeah, well, I think, look, purpose is really unlocked. You know, it's not something that you go and, you know, go, this is it. You know, it's in you.
Yeah.
And so it's a discovery process. It's like when I work with organizations to discover their core values. You go to the meeting and there's the leadership team or whatever, and you go, okay, what are your core values? And they go, well, you know, we don't have any, you know, we haven't done this exercise. No, you have them. You just haven't discovered them yet.
Right.
You know, so it's really, purpose is about unlocking and discovering that. But I think about purpose. Richard Leiter says, you got to think about it in big P, little P, you know, so the big P purpose, when you get right down to us, all of us just want to belong to something and know we matter. that's really where we all are as human beings.
Yeah.
And we, at the end of the day, we really just have to get up and grow every day and serve others. That's going to be where we're going to get the most happiness. So for everyone, however you approach those themes of personal growth, development, and service is where the big P tends to land. And you might use different words to shape your big P, but that's going to be fundamentally where people, if they work on it and chip away at it over time, they'll get there. Mm-hmm. In some form or fashion. The little P is something that evolves. It's organic. It's growing and changing with you. You and I have been on this journey in our careers. Well, guess what? Your purpose 10 years ago was not what it is today, and nor was mine. So a new graduate very much could be on the track of acquisition of confidence and practice, skills. You know, their purpose is to be the best veterinary clinician they could be, small animal, large animal, whatever their focus might be. But they may organize their purpose around, you know, sort of appropriate items for their point in their journey. They may then find later that needs to evolve. Okay, they're a really good clinician. They can see 30 a day and do a great job. But maybe there's a point that they said, well, you know, I'm not a good enough surgeon and I really would like to be better at that. So they may pick some of these tasks, but it's all still around excellence as a clinician, and differentiating those things is quite important. But then as they grow, they could get interested in, you know, they maybe start having children and then their family becomes more important and that may redefine their purpose at that stage. So it's very hard to specifically say this should be yours. It's something that each individual owns at their core, and they just have to do the work. And by that, I mean, read, listen to podcasts, attend seminars, seek counsel from others, really engage, spend some time on it so that they discover what is really motivating them, and they'll experience an incredible uplift in their energy and life. You know, having a purpose adds 7 to 10 years statistically to your life. And so when you're in the second half of life, like I am, I kind of think of my time now as the third quarter. Hopefully there's a fourth, and maybe we'll find another extra bonus year or two.
That's important.
Yeah. Over time. So, you know, that's the work that every person has to do. I'm excited about that. I love helping people with that.
I always say that, you know, your purpose turns into your legacy, and your legacy doesn't have to be when you're gone. It's like when you leave the exam room or you leave the shift from the hospital. You know, what story do you want others to know about the purpose and impact that you've made on the animals' lives or those around you? And surrounding yourself, like you just said, to like mentorships. And I always like tell my friends as well, like, you want real friends, not yes friends. Friends that be like, yes, you should do that career change, or no, don't. That's not you, Adam. They shouldn't do that. So I love that you broke that down so eloquently. That's really great.
Let me ask you this, Adam. If I want you to envision just for a minute meeting Adam 10 years from now.
Right.
What would he tell you?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, let's see. You're a lot. You're like the Ryan Seacrest of vet men right now. but I think 10 years from now too, I would say you've impacted quite a number of colleagues in the profession. You know, my biggest impact that I wanted to do in this position was to be that one person that can make a change happen, especially in the area of DEI. And so hopefully in 10 years, my little part of a big thing is that the changing landscape of our profession will look a little bit differently, you know, with our colleagues, whether we have of color, of inclusion, like all those different things. So I really hope that's part of what I would look at in 10 years. What about you?
Yeah, it's those 10-year blocks are getting a little more interesting now that I'm in my 60s, right? Well, yeah, I'm a new grandfather, and so there's some new, you know, forces acting upon my life. But I think a 10-year older Andy would probably say to me, look, over the next 10 years, I want you to keep active, stay healthy, think about your physical health, maybe a little more critically as you're aging. I want you to stay fun.
Right.
So that your kids and your grandkids want to be around you and don't become a crotchety old dude.
Right.
And stay active and pursue making a difference, making a dent in the world in whatever little trivial way gets put in front of you by the universe. And if you do that, Andy, young Andy, I think you'll be happy and healthy and able to move forward into that next generation when, you know, the first number of my age would start with an 8, for God's sake.
Oh, my goodness. Listen, like the 50s, the new 40 and so forth, and whatever you want to call it. So you got a great legacy and a lot more storytelling to do there. I was just going to close because I know that you've had such great experience with financial health and, you know, personal growth and development. And so, you know, as you know, in this profession, we do have a problem with student loan debt, of course. So, we do have quite a few vet students that listen to this podcast. So what would be like a good couple pieces of advice that you can give the new graduates and the veterinary students that are listening about their career in vet med?
Yeah, well, I think the number one solution to any level of indebtedness is earning power, right? And, you know, so build your skills thoughtfully. And, you know, let me back up. Sorry, Adam. Veterinarians' relationship with money needs help. The veterinary colleges are choosing veterinary students, so they're in control of the very top of the funnel, if you will, early in the pipeline. And so, you know, in part, we have to ask ourselves, you know, who's responsible for the problems that we're in? And what do we need to be teaching young people entering the profession? And who do we need to be selecting at the front end of the pipeline so that we have a different outcome when we get through the pipeline? If you're already out of the pipeline, and that's what we're talking about, the fundamental principles are: have a plan, save early, look for ways to maximize your earning power through your skill set. And I think veterinarians are, as I sent you in a note, underperforming assets in many ways. Look for ways to have equity, take responsibility, be leaders, and earn so that you can, you know, pay back your debts. It's unfortunate for this group that the front end hasn't been more thoughtful. And that's something I'm pretty passionate about. We've got to do a better job on the front end pipeline.
I agree. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Anderson, this has been fantastic. This just flew by. Where did the time go? My goodness, time flies when you're having fun.
Thank you for having me. I really admire your work, your energy and your passion for our profession and what, you know, the challenges we have. But as we discussed, it's the most wonderful opportunity set that I can imagine. I encourage every young person that has any interest to go in our profession. I think the future is brighter than the past. And I'm excited that people like you are leading us.
Well, thank you so much. It's a great time to be a veterinarian, everyone. It really is. And we're just getting started, is what I tell everybody, with technology on the rise and all the great, wonderful things that are out there. We're just getting this party started in this profession. So where can we find more information about CityVet?
CityVet.com. Lots of stuff there and a great team. And we're very welcoming to all folks that would like to learn more. So thanks for allowing me to chat about it.
You're welcome. I have to give a plug to our dear friend of ours. I love her to pieces, Dr. Pamela Hale. Pam has been on the podcast before. She has been one of our keynote speakers. And Dr. Hale, we love you. So we just had to give you a plug there. So there you go.
Hey, Pam.
thank you so much, Dr. Anderson, for being on the Vet Blast podcast.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for our listeners for tuning in. Thanks for all you do. Please stay safe out there. Don't forget to rate today's podcast. It always helps us out. And we'll see you next time right here on the podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.